Okay, let's get the show on the road. What we're going to do is just kick this thing off. You know, this is the pre-show and this is the show. Gave the crew, Margaret, Bud, Robert, General Shaw, gave them the whole day off. So it's just you and me. What we used to call a Phil only, I just call it, it's the Phil Hendry Show. It's just, you know, sans the usual crew, because today is just a day where that's what we're going to do. It's Friday, which I can't tell you how much I love that. Been for me kind of a, you know, busy week. I got a lot of stuff to, I have a lot of stuff I got to take care of in terms of our website, and a lot of stuff to tell you guys about, and just other things that I thought I'd kick around with you guys for the few minutes that we have today here on this here podcast. Now, first of all, this is a note for our Backstage Pass guys. I know a lot of you subscribed, not maybe not a lot of you, but there are a significant number of you subscribed to our website so that you could access the show via iTunes, a premium service, a premium offer whereby you could subscribe to the show through iTunes and have it delivered to you. That is the premium show with no commercial content, etc., to iTunes. Well, a number of security protocols that we put into place for our website, and other websites do the same thing, seems to have knocked that askance. It's befouled it a bit. It's skewed it a bit. So we're working on that. We haven't given up on it. However, I want you to know that, as I say, some of the things we do for our website to ensure that, you know, we have a good, secure, running website, those things have caused external, sometimes external connections that we have to other things to, you know, go down. However, that's being worked on. We're going to have that up and running for you. Now, the other thing I wanted to tell you about is that tonight we're having our Backstage Pass chat, and tonight's the night that we're going to be drawing the winners of two tickets, and it's actually going to be the name of one person who could bring a guest to our race day, which will be on March the 30th at Santa Anita Racetrack in Arcadia, California. As I've said, so often my hometown, but also the central major thing in Arcadia. That was the center of our town, and still is, I imagine, for people who live there. Santa Anita Racetrack, a horse racing, a thoroughbred racing plant, as we call it, and one of the most beautiful, if not the single most beautiful track, I think, in the whole world, because there's the mountains and really kind of cool-looking stuff. So we're going to have that drawing tonight. So if you're not on our BSP board, it'll be too late. I mean, we've already, we're just going to be running all of the names that we have on the board, and then we will draw our winner. And that is, so if you're a Backstage Pass member, it's not enough. You have to have been a Backstage Pass member who joined us on our Friday night chats and then got your zip code up on our worldwide map. And when I say worldwide, it's, yeah, it's mostly Americans, but we've got some, you know, folks listening to us in, we've got people in Germany, we have somebody in Italy, we have, like, you know, six guys spread all over. We're international. We got six guys someplace. No, we have Ben in Dubai, King Cap in Tokyo. I don't know everybody's names, but we got a guy in Guam. We got a couple of people, believe it or not, in Beijing, China. Two whole guys. And then we have Germany and we have Italy, like that. But most of the folks are in the United States. And, you know, if we draw the winner of the race day, and it's the guy in China, I mean, you know, I'm going to have to assume that you want me to draw somebody else, wouldn't you? I don't know. Just took a slug of my Pepsi. You know what we'll do? If we draw the cat in China, then we'll go ahead and draw provisional. We'll say, hey, the dude in China, because, you know, it's going to be on March the 30th. And if the guy in China, whose name, forgive me, it escapes me, I don't know the names of anybody who's a BSP unless you know, point them out to me here in the States. But if we draw the name of the guy in China and we'll say, hey, you know, it's on March the 30th. Think you can make it? So who knows? If I wind up giving those tickets away to somebody else, the guy flips his lid saying that I'm on my way to the airport to get tickets. You jackass. To fly there. So we'll make sure that everybody's taken care of. It's going to be a beautiful day, though, and haven't been in the races in a long, long time. And these are brand new luxury suites at Santa Anita. They, you know, they've had over there, I guess if you've seen any kind of a movie that's had horse racing in it, you've seen the traditional box that people sit in. You know, like those 1940 movies and the guy with the binoculars, and there's a his wife or girlfriend is there, and they're in a box. That was the height of luxurious horse racing viewing for pretty much the entirety of the history of horse racing until the advent of the luxury suite, which of course was first introduced, I think, in the football world. I could be wrong, and then basketball, and every single solitary sports stadium in the world now that's, you know, worth anything, every brand new stadium is built with these luxury seats because it's an amazing source of revenue. I mean, they get, you know, what are you getting? 50 grand for, you can get one of these suites for, I don't know. I can't even, I think it's like 50, 60, it used to be 50, 60 grand, 70 grand, you could get one for a full season. But maybe that's changed. So we obtained this suite at an auction for LaSalle High School, my alma mater. And I was hosting this auction, and this suite was part of the auction. And I went ahead and just sort of threw in a preemptive bid, you know. That is, I don't care what anybody was going to bid. I was going to top that bid and then go broke. And then wondering, you know, what the hell it was I was doing. No, I knew that I was going to... I knew I was going to take the suite because I don't think anybody was willing to. There were a lot of cheap creeps there, and I'm joking. Anyway, that's that. That's a piece of news that I wanted you guys to know. So this past week, I've had, and I mentioned it on the show, I've had this brutal insomnia. I don't know how many of you guys suffer from insomnia. I know a lot of people do, and it's a bitch, man. And the thing about insomnia that I believe personally is that it's mostly psychological, because you know, and I know, anybody that's had it, you know that you're going to screw yourself up. You're going to lay there knowing you have to go to sleep, and the very idea that you're thinking I have to go to sleep is going to keep you awake. And I've read a lot of books on insomnia, and I also actually was at UCLA many years ago. Maybe 30 years ago, I went to UCLA to the sleep clinic there. And they did a sleeping EEG, an electroencephalogram. That is reading the brain waves. And they do that by simply attaching these electrical sensors to your head. And then in the sleep clinic there, they want you to go to sleep. So what they tell you is, oh, you're coming in for the sleeping EEG? Yeah, okay. Don't sleep at all the night before. We'll schedule you for 8 o'clock in the morning. But remember, you can't sleep. Okay. And then come on in, and you'll go to sleep, and we'll do a test. Well, I don't know what kind of insomniacs they deal with at UCLA, at least back in the, you know, mid-'80s, mid to early 1980s when I went there. Because telling me to stay awake all night and thinking that that's going to put me to sleep at 8 o'clock in the morning, that ain't necessarily the case. Because, first of all, it's a little nerve-wracking to, I don't know if you've been through the experience. At that time, you went over to UCLA and you checked in with the nurse. And then they brought you into this sort of a cubicle where you're expected to lay down and sleep. Well, here's what it was. It's a bed. It's not the most comfortable bed. In fact, as I remember, it was barely a mattress. It was more or less like a board or something. And there's a window there. So when you lay down, the doctors can look in at you as you're sleeping. Okay? And I believe there's like one blanket. It was really... Now, the thinking, I guess, and it's probably pretty sound thinking, because I don't know... That, you know, I'm not the only guy that reacted this way. Maybe they feel, oh, this is great because everybody comes in here, falls asleep. I don't know what's wrong with you, Henry. But the fact of the matter was, it wasn't very comfortable for me. And I don't care if I was awake all night. When I got there and I laid down in this bed and I looked around and I saw this glass where people are staring at me, and I knew I was going to fall asleep. Now, it turns out that I did. But when the doctor came in, because what they do is they have the electrodes attached to you. And one of the things they want to find out is if while you're sleeping, you're having a seizure. In other words, something's happening to you that is depriving you of sleep. Is there something happening to you while you're sleeping that's depriving you of that good deep sleep you should be getting, you know, to be healthy? They want to find out and eliminate any of that. Is there a seizure you're having? Do you have epilepsy? I mean, what's going on with you? I could dig that because I'd already had like a CAT scan. I mean, I'm telling you, man, this was a period of my life where I was trying to get to the bottom of my whole insomnia thing. So I had a CAT scan. I'm one of the few people in the world who's actually seen his own brain. And it wasn't anything that knocked me out. I can tell you that. I mean, if they asked me, you know, well, what do you think of your brain? I wouldn't have very high opinion of it, but it looked like a brain. So what are you going to do? So I'd had that. They eliminated any kind of organic problem there. So they said, well, let's go and have this EEG. So when it was over with, and I say when it was over with, it was about an hour. So they were going to wake my... If I fell into the deepest sleep in the history of man on this earth, they're going to wake my ass up in an hour anyway, okay? So it was not going to be... There was nothing about this experience for me that was the least bit, you know, inducive of sleep. There was nothing going on in this experience that... Oh, yeah, man, let's just kick back here and fall asleep. It's just so comfortable and restful. And there's, yeah, I mean, it was for me, it was very nerve-wracking. But as it turns out, I did fall asleep for very, very, very short period of time. The doctor came in and told me, we were able to track you sleeping. Oh, I did fall asleep. Yeah. They said, but it wasn't for very long. And so if we're looking to see, for instance, if you go into a seizure or something, you just weren't asleep for a long enough period. So that was a big fat waste of time. That was a big fat waste of time. So I came out of that experience and, you know, they give all these results to my doctor. Well, at the time I had a great doctor. His name was Dr. Gans. And I say he was a great doctor. I'm assuming he was a great doctor, but what I loved about him is the very simple thing that he asked me when I was in there for a visit one day. He said, do you mind if I could find out something? I said, what? He said, I want to find out if insurance, because I noticed you have insurance, obviously. I said, yeah. He said, and I have to write down a diagnosis for the insurance company. I said, yeah. So you get your insurance covered. They want to know, well, what's the, and I'd sure like to find out if lycanthropy is covered. I said, well, okay, you know, and we both laughed. Lycanthropia is the disease of the mind. And maybe there's a physical manifestation somehow where a man believes he morphs into a wolf at night. In other words, the werewolf syndrome. There's an actual name for it because it is based in some sort of medical reality. Lycanthropia, where you believe yourself to be a wolf or some kind of a dog. You're a dog, all right, you know, but so I am. Said, yeah, that's pretty funny. Although I came to you for actual medical advice, doc. Oh, no, I understand. So anyway, he's the guy that was treating me. And he said, okay, so that's not working. He said, we could get an EEG on you. He said, I wonder, Phil, because sleep issues is something I've been dealing with. He said, I'm wondering now if what you have is related to some kind of a narcolepsy. I said, well, why do you say that? He said, well, you know, you've told me not only do you have a hard time sleeping, but that you when you laugh really hard. Now, listen, this is going to probably blow your minds to hear this. This is true. When I laugh really hard, when I find something really funny, when I'm laughing to the extent that it's like a belly laugh and more, I lose muscular control. Now, that's fine if you're laughing. It's okay, you know, because when I think about it, I laugh. And when I laugh, thinking about me losing muscular control, I lose muscular control if I laugh hard enough. It's a crazy thing to tell you about, but it's true. Thank God most of the time when I'm listening to, for instance, my podcast, which I personally find funny, I have oftentimes found myself like, okay, I got to slap myself or turn the podcast off because I'm laughing my ass off to the point where I can't move. I'm telling you the truth. I can't move, and I find myself shaking my head, doing anything I can to kind of shake myself, my physical self, out of this state. So I told the doctor about that. He goes, well, okay. He said, these are all syndromes that are related. Because then I had that other one, which I have told you guys about, which is sleep paralysis. And that's where you wake up and you can't move. So, you see, sleep and me, it's a really messed up relationship. And yet I have had in my life great nights of sleep. But there's no question for me, and for anybody with sleep issues, booze, coffee, anything that messes with your, you know, motor sensory balance, coordination there is definitely going to screw your sleep up. Coffee or booze can induce sleep paralysis in me. And the most famous moment of sleep paralysis, I guess, in my life, as it pertains to people that, you know, follow me, follow the podcast, listen to my show or whatever, is the night of the Conor McGregor Floyd Mayweather fight, when I was having cocktails, if you want to call it that, I was watching the fight with Maria, and we got done and we went to sleep, and I woke up with sleep paralysis, rolled off the bed, because this was my bright idea, and I got this from Dr. Gans, actually, years before, when he said, and I, you know, I'd already proved it wrong, I don't know why I did it again, he said, I would love to find out that if, when people are undergoing sleep paralysis, if some external threat presented itself, would they be able to just immediately snap themselves out of that and save themselves? In other words, he was trying to find out, is it psychologically induced or is it a physical problem? If it's psychological, then while you're in this state of sleep paralysis and there is a real life external threat like a fire or whatever, you're going to wake up. You're going to break yourself out of that sleep paralysis and jump up and run out of the house, whatever the hell it is you got to do. However, if it is physical, then there ain't nothing you're going to be able to do. Except what? Well, in trying to figure that, whether what Dr. Gans's theory was, if trying to figure out whether it was physical or whether it was psychological, I came up with a bright idea one night, years ago, of simply, when I had sleep paralysis, to roll, I could roll my body left and right, to roll off the bed. Well, I did it. And I hit the floor, man, like bang, you know, like it's just, in fact, I was married at the time and to Maria, and she looks up and with a look on her face, was like, what the hell are you doing? Because what woke her up is my hitting the floor. I said, no, I told her, I said, I was trying out a theory about sleep paralysis. Never mind, go back to sleep. Yeah, okay. Sure. So years later, I decided to try it again, which is like, why? Why would you do that, Phil? The first time it didn't work. What makes you think the second time it'll work? I don't know. I thought maybe the second time it would. Who knows? Maybe there was some sort of mistake made there, you know, my body or my mind. But nonetheless, on that night, I rolled off the bed and I clipped the corner of the end table, as you guys know, and I got the black eye and, you know, my head split open. And I wound up taking a trip to the hospital in an ambulance and having to get, you know, my head stitched up because I was bleeding, man. I was like, you know, couldn't stem the flow of blood coming from my head. So and then I wound up getting a black eye from that. So that's, you know, that's my life when it comes to sleep. The other thing, though, which is losing muscular control when you laugh, Dr. Gans told me that was more related to narcolepsy. Narcolepsy's real, real wild. You'll go to sleep if you get too emotional. You'll fall asleep if you are threatened, for instance, if you get frightened. That's a feature of narcolepsy. You know. And they're wondering, for years they were wondering, was it a blood sugar thing? In other words, if you saw these guys that were falling asleep every time they started, you know, either feeling threatened or laughing too hard, if you threw a loaf of bread at them and had them eat that, would that cure it? I mega looking into that. They're looking into megavitamin therapy, all kinds of stuff. I know from my experience, and this is true of me, since I started this diet that I've been on, and by the way, I hit 210, which was my, I guess we could get into this in a minute, but I hit 210, that was my target. Guess what? I'm at the doctor the other day, and he says to me, Dr. Emery says to me, 210, yeah, that's good, good. Where did you, well, that was the number, I thought. I thought that was, well, no, yes, of course, Phil. I mean, it'd be better if you were 190. I got another 20 pounds to go? You're kidding me. Well, you know, I mean, it took everything I had, man. But anyway, wherever I was there with that that point, what I've noticed is, and this is the, you know what, man, the proof is in the pudding, man. The proof's in the doing. On this diet, there's hardly any sugar. I mean, except what I put in my coffee. I don't eat any fruit. I eat nothing but green vegetables and protein, like soy protein. I mean, this is what I've been, I mean, it's... the stuff you discover, the stuff you find out when you're on a diet, when you're trying to get weight off, when you're trying to consume fewer calories, and all of a sudden every calorie becomes really valuable. You know, every calorie becomes important, and you start to figure out, what are the important calories here? Am I going to go in, am I going to buy that can of soup for 500 calories, or is there something I can make that's going to be far more substantial than that for 500 calories? And you start choosing that way. When I first went on these diets, when I first made a serious attempt at losing weight like 6 years ago, and I was close to 300 pounds then, I began making stupid-ass decisions like, wow, look at that salami. I wonder how many calories is in that, and how many salami slices could I make out of a sandwich? Really kind of like ridiculous-ass things. Who cares? Don't buy the salami, because there's going to be something that you can buy that will have as many calories in it and will be far more filling and is going to, you know, because there's a thing called empty calories. For instance, a hot dog bun is empty calories. Two hot dog buns, 300 calories, and it just ain't, it's nothing, man. You can eat 300 calories worth of, I don't know, whatever, you know, like 300 calories worth of some substantial, like a fruit or some substantial protein source, and it's going to keep you going a lot longer than 300 hot dog bun calories. So I learned about this, and during this entire period of this diet, during the first diet back in 2012, and this diet this year started, which started in August, September, October, November, December, January. Basically 5.5 months it took me to go from 260 to 210. So that's, you know, just about, it's a little less than 10 pounds a month. So I was not quite on the same schedule. I was burning the pounds my first diet when I was losing weight off of 300 pounds, actually 290. I was churning through the calories. I was losing almost 11 pounds a month. But one of the things that I was doing back then that I'm not doing now is I was counting calories in iceberg lettuce. No, you don't have to do that. I was counting calories in broccoli. I was counting calories in everything. You don't have to do that. But more importantly, what I was doing is I was mixing in exercise, and I haven't done it that way this year with this one, which I got to start to do because it'll change your metabolism and do all that stuff. So, long story short, I did not, and I have not experienced sleep paralysis in this entire period of time that I've been on this diet. And it didn't happen when I was on the original diet. What was the missing, what's the missing link? I got to believe it's the sugar. Okay. But a high quantity of sugar. Because, like sugar on top of sugar. Because the one thing that I am doing with this diet that I wasn't doing back then, and yet I don't have sleep paralysis now and I didn't have it then, is I'm drinking booze. Now, I'm not drinking a lot, but I have a weekend's worth of, which is like three or four drinks worth of tequila. Now that's sugar. And you'd think that that would give me sleep paralysis, but it hasn't. So I believe it's not enough sugar to cause that when I was not on the diet and I was having sleep paralysis and all that stuff, I must have been powering down the sugar, man, like every bloody day. And I'm talking about probably, maybe not fruit sugar, but I don't know. Sugar's in every damn food there is. Every processed food, there's sugar in it. So crackers, crap like that, you know. Maybe even cheese. Who knows? So as obviously it was, you know, the diet cuts a hell of a lot of sugar out of your diet. And I got to believe that that's it. Because I drink coffee. Damn straight I'm drinking. There ain't no way I ain't going to drink coffee. There's no way. Imagine a diet. And the other thing is you can't drink coffee. Well, I'm not going on a diet. You know, well, Mr. Henry, no, there's not a chance in hell that I'm going to be giving up coffee anytime in this lifetime. Maybe in the next, if I'm a monk or something, it won't happen. But nobody's ever said that you have to, so that's the cool part of that. So 210 pounds I hit, man, and I hit it like 3 days ago. And it was not the dramatic thing that it was the first time I hit it, like back in 2012. It was, oh, wow, there's 210. And the reason is because just 4 days before, I'd been over at Dr. Emery's, my fine, wonderful doctor over there in Century City. This is a guy he's a genius. He really is. And he has this chart. And he has body types on this chart. And he has age groupings on this chart. And he puts all of this stuff together. Now, this is, mind you, this is information that he's put together, culled from a variety of databases down through many decades. Now, I'm not exaggerating when I tell you that he and his partner, for the longest time, medical science and psychiatric science never knew what to do with all of these EEGs that they had, going back to the beginning of EEGs, which is sometime in the early part of the 20th century. They didn't know what the hell. They had a database. The world had a database. You know, doctors' offices all over the world had these EEGs. What do we do with them? Because we're not really sure. Nobody knew how to read them. Yeah, but they could. There's certain things they could read. They could see that certain things correlated with, for instance, epilepsy, or certain things correlated with other, you know, malfunctions or events having to do with the brain. But there was no real collating and there's no assessing all of this data from the standpoint of what's the commonality of all of these EEGs. Until some doctors got together. One of them was Dr. Emery, and said, well, let's take a look at all of these and see where the commonality is, see if there's things that repeat, and we can find out what part of the brain these waves are coming from, and then we can begin to put those brain waves together with certain maladies that we've detected. Is there a consistency? Is there, you know, do we constantly keep seeing the same kind of brain wave with the same kind of personality, et cetera, so on and so forth? I mean, it's a job that took decades. But they did it. And they had, for the very first time in the history of pharmacology, a physical test for giving people antidepressants or any kind of mood manipulating or mood enhancing pharmacology. Because doctors were just prescribing this stuff without any real physical test. There's no blood test, man. You can't give somebody a blood test. Let's find out if you have depression here. Let's take some blood and see. You can't do that. You can take blood and you can read a lot of stuff, but you cannot read brain chemistry. There's no blood test for that. Maybe someday. But what they did have were these EEGs. And they could see areas of the brain, the brain wave speed among healthy people, the brain wave speed among unhealthy people, where certain activity in the brain takes place, when this happens, when that happens. I mean, it's not, obviously, this is work for far more brilliant people than me, but they did this, right? And then they would look at this and say, well, this is something that's happening, and we have a drug for that. I know the drug that can affect that part of the brain. And well, what's happening? Well, the alpha waves are too fast here, and they're not fast enough there. It looks to me like this is somebody, for instance, in the case of Phil Hendry, his alpha waves aren't fast enough. Believe it or not, you have to have there has to be a certain speed of your brain waves for you to fall asleep. For you to be able to fall asleep, you don't necessarily need to slow things down. Some people need to speed things up. For instance, are you one of these people that can go to sleep after a cup of coffee? Because I am. A lot of people think that's nuts. How do you do that, man? Believe me, man, I can have a cup of coffee and I can go right to sleep. Sometimes I go, it's what I need. And as I found out, your alpha waves, which are this part of your brain that you have to have, you know, there has to be a certain speed in these brain waves for you to fall asleep. Mine were too slow. How'd they know? Because they saw it with an EEG. This is years after I went to UCLA. This is when I met up with Dr. Emery. And he said, oh, so, you know, they treat you for that. And next thing you know, I'm falling asleep. Now, the other thing, the challenge for me is like staying asleep, because I wake up in the middle of the goddamn night and I'm like a lot of you guys. So don't tell me you don't do it. What's the first thing you do? Reach for the phone. Well, I might as well just stay awake for the next 6 hours and I'll just go on Twitter and get pissed off about something. I've decided, man, and I know this is going to come as really good news to a lot of you, but I mean, I'm really, you know what my political opinions are, and they ain't going to change. I don't see anything happening that's going to make them change, but I'm not going to change anything with my voice on Twitter. I might as well just go about the job that I have to the best of my ability. There's all kinds of fucked up shit happening in this country. And I can see it, and it doesn't surprise me, but it's getting to be really oppressively distracting and, you know, and you get angry. You get really fucking angry. And it starts to fuck with your day. It starts to mess with your day. It starts to mess with, you know, your sleep. Just so fucking pissed off. Really pissed off, you know, and I mean, Christ, you know, but either you're going to obsess about that shit or you're going to find some other way to deal with life, man. So I made some decisions in my creative life that hopefully, you know, I'll be able to stick to. I got to take a sip of this Coke. I'm sure I will. Hey, I lost 60 pounds. I lost almost 100 pounds another time. There ain't nothing I can't do. No, I, it's a promise I made myself, but there's no way to go through life, man. It's just every goddamn day. Your life may be great, but there's this other shit going on. It's fucking unbelievable. But it isn't going to, there's nothing I'm going to do that's going to change it. But I saw it coming, man. I saw it coming. It was no goddamn surprise to me at all. Not at all. Not even a little itsy bit. Every goddamn thing's happening. It didn't take a lot of brains either. I mean, all you have to know is people. All you have to know are people. What personality types? What kind of guy is this? What kind of guy is that? I could see it coming a mile away. It was no surprise. No fucking surprise. But that doesn't do anything, you know, that's not helping anything. So I want to get back to doing what I do for a living, which is primarily humor. Primarily humor. So to that end, you know, let's lose a whole bunch of weight and this and that and something else. So and by the way, let's get some sleep, Hendry. Good Lord. So that's the extent of that, and that's what I was going to tell you about. Oh, and one other thing, how it affected the week. That was the thing about not getting sleep, and we've all been there, but if it's a matter of course in your life, it's a bitch. It's a challenge, man. It's like you begin to not want to just engage in certain activities, and you can't let that happen. Now, the other night, and I mentioned this on the netcast, I couldn't get any sleep, and I knew I had a big goddamn day. I had a seminar that I was going to be on a panel at SAG-AFTRA, which is a union I belong to and have belonged to since 1978. And this was an employment opportunity panel. I was going to be on with three or four other people. And then I had to go to a recording session. And all of this was happening in Los Angeles, which is about 50 miles away from where I live. And there was going to be traffic going, traffic coming home, and traffic in between those two places. What kind of traffic? Not sure. You can't predict it. But I knew it was going to be a long day, and I knew that there's one thing I hate. It's burning a whole goddamn day on just two things because it's so far away. That's what's going on, and then you turn around, you come home, and the day is shot, and the sun's gone down, and you're driving home in the dark. You know, you're hitting the house with the lights off and everything. So I had to kind of plan a lot of stuff. Plus, you know, we got this diabetic cat, Brea. She needs to get her insulin shots, and that comes at a specific time, which I've got, you know, a friend of mine who's going to actually take that over, our good buddy Susie, just as soon as we get Susie over there to Horizon to learn how to give insulin shots. I mean, I got to do something like that. So, but anyway, that was the least of my worries because we got Brea covered. I knew that I was going to hit her with her insulin shot and then bang, I'm gone. And I should get home before 12 hours elapses when she needs her next shot, which would be around like 9 o'clock at night. If I wasn't home by nine, there's something definitely wrong in my life. But I got done with this panel and I hadn't slept. And I'm drinking coffee and then I'm thinking, God, now I got to go and I got to be in this recording session. So I thought about falling asleep in my truck in the parking structure at SAG, right? You know, just lean the seat back. And I've done that like a couple of times in my life. For instance, I had an appointment somewhere. I was down near Wilshire Boulevard. And this is a section of Wilshire that toward downtown. There was a lot of street. The street was being dug up. I don't know what the hell they're building over there, man, but there's a whole bunch of construction going on over there. Is that another connection to the Metro Rail? Maybe. Anyway, I had an appointment in this building, but I didn't have the appointment for another hour. And where am I going to go, man? I don't want to sit in a coffee shop. So I literally parked the truck. I parked my car, and I rolled the seat back and tried to sleep for... And that's when you can sleep. Don't ask me how it is. I can't sleep when everybody is just leaving me alone and go ahead and sleep. I can't. But there I am in the truck in the middle of the goddamn day with, you know, traffic everywhere. You bet I can fall asleep. Yeah. So I almost did that at SAG, but I didn't. So now I'm going to answer some emails. And then I got in and I started the truck up and I split over to the studio. And I was lucky because they had a big block of time that they wanted to make sure to cut my tracks. So I didn't have to wait around for my appointed time. I could go in there and do my thing and get out of there. And I was so grateful, man, because then I got into the car and began the journey home. And when I got home, went to bed. So that's what we're going to try to do tonight. That's my big night, man, here on this this Friday. Now, I know we have the chat tonight. Generally, I don't have any problem sleeping on Friday night because, you know, it's the weekend. We do have our chat. It comes up at 7 o'clock Pacific at philhenryshow.com. If you're a Backstage Pass member, please do join us over there for that. And we draw the winner for two passes to Santa Anita on the 30th of March to join us for the fans and friends of the Phil Hendry Show, you know, gathering, because that's going to be the name of the race, by the way. They're naming a race after us. That's the name of the race, the fans and friends of the Phil Hendry Show. And then we'll go down to the winner's circle and we'll lay the trophy on the winning dude, who are the owner and the jockey, and even the horse will look at us and go, thank you. Maybe the horse will say a few words to us. Maybe a little ignore us. They generally do. But it'll be a groovy thing. Plus, we'll get our pictures taken. You know, have you ever seen those really cool pictures of people? There's the horse, like four people grinning. We'll be part of that. There's a horse that's like, I did all the work, man. Me. So that'll be part of it too. So it'll be fun. It'll be a beautiful thing. It'll be a beautiful thing. All right, I'm going to say goodbye because that's all I got for today. Thank you very much for waiting through this week with me. We'll see you tonight, and we'll see you with even more to say on Sunday night, our live streaming show on Sunday night. We're adding in a few more Miami hours. We're also going to get started on adding in those KFI hours to our archive. I can't wait for that stuff to get loaded in. It's going to be a whole other adventure in wild. Thanks for listening. World famous Phil Hendry Show, executive produced by me, Phil Hendry, for Siempre Incorporated, all rights reserved, right here on Podcast One. See you tonight. See you for the Saturday Cinema tomorrow on Saturday and our live Sunday night show at 6 Pacific.